Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to a happy Rico Bronya. We're going to do something very, very, very positive today. We're only going to talk about good things. We're going to talk about the great free agent signings in the history of the New York Mets. Sometimes we talk too much negative. I don't know why I do that. I don't know why you do that. So today, it's all positive. Now, a couple of things in terms of free agent signings. We need to clarify here. And you tell me how you view a free agent signing, because there is one little debate, though this will play more into the bad free agent signings, which will happen at a later date. When you trade for a guy, and a guy is on your team, or you develop that guy, and then that guy gets to free agency, and you re-sign him, does that count as a free agent signing? To me, it does not. Pete, how do you clarify that?
I agree. Once they are on your team, whether you've traded for them, whether you brought them through the system, and they hit the market, they're still your possession until somebody else takes them.
Very good. I agree with you. Now, for pro free agent signings, for good free agent signings, the one that would eliminate, just so we can mention this right off the top, and there's no debate, is Mike Piazza. Because as you recall, the Mets traded for Mike Piazza. They traded Preston Wilson, Ed Yornell, Jeff Getz. He comes over in the middle of 1998 and then becomes a free agent. And during that kind of signing window, the Mets re-signed him to the record-breaking $90-plus million deal. That's not a free agent signee. Now, the reason I ask that is because at a later date, I'm going to be really negative. And we're going to talk about bad free agent signings. And there's a lot of them that fit that mold, specifically Oliver Perez. But now that we got that off our chest, let's talk about good signings. So here's how it's going to work. I want to refresh everyone's memory. I want to refresh your memory, Pete. I even want to refresh my memory. So we're going to go through what I deem, and if I'm missing one, certainly at me, if you will, the free agent signings that really were good, or at least could be in the discussion of good and productive. And I came up with about 12 or 13 of them. Once we go through them, you know, rather quickly, or maybe not, now it'll be refreshing our mind, and we can all determine the four best free agent signings in the history of the Mets. Why four? Mount Rushmore, damn it. The Mount Rushmore of free agent signings in the history of the New York Mets. So let's start in the early 90s, because really, that's when the Mets started signing free agents. And I'm going to surprise you with something. Because sometimes there are free agent signings that history will tell you were bad, but if you look at it closer, maybe they weren't bad. What I mean by that is Bobby Bonilla. I'm going to start right there. Now, why would Bobby Bonilla be discussed? Hear me out, Pete. Bobby Bonilla is talked about all these years later because of the fact that they're still paying him. It's the most overrated, stupid, lazy discussion in the history of sports. So this will help you out when you're with your family next time and someone wants to make a joke about Bobby Bonilla. Say, Hey, can you tell me about Bruce Sutter's contract? Oh, you don't know? Google it, bitch. That's right. Just make sure that you don't say bitch to like a family member who you love. And that's kind of disrespectful. But the whole Bobby Bonilla contract thing is much ado about nothing. It's just an excuse for us to hate the Wilpons. There's other reasons to not like the Wilpons. So here's the deal with Bobby Bonilla. At age 29 years old, the Mets stole him away from the Pittsburgh Pirates and paid him a four-year, $23 million deal. The problem was Bobby Bonilla had a big effing mouth and at his opening press conference had a smile on his face and said to the media, you can't whip this smile off my face, and then made some comment about, I'll show you the Bronx. So Bobby did not get off to a great start. He also didn't have the greatest first year in 1992, which is sort of similar, a pattern you'll notice with free agents through the history of the Mets, good or bad. His first year here, he only hit 19 home runs. He only drove in 70 runs. He missed about 35 games due to injury, and his OPS was down to a 779. Not the worst numbers in the world, not what you expected. But here's what hurt Bobby. The team sucked. Following year, worst team money could buy, 1993. He had 34 home runs. He had an 874 OPS. Is that bad? No. Was his defense crappy? Yes. Was his attitude crappy? Absolutely. But he was productive. 1994, before the strike, 20 home runs, 67 RBIs, 878 OPS. Not bad. Not bad at all. Then in 1995, this would be the year the Mets would finally trade him because final year of his contract, Mets are going nowhere. They want to dump him. He had a 984 OPS, hit 10 home runs, drove in 46 runs. They traded him to the Baltimore Orioles in the deal for Alex Ochoa. You can't blame Bobby Bonilla that Alex Ochoa wasn't very good. He was a five-tool bust. That's not Bonilla's fault. So here's my problem here, Pete. I just gave you the numbers. Was Bobby Bonilla a bad free agent signing?
No, but they remember him. A lot of Mets fans, I think, will still go back to later on in 99.
Hold on. That's not the same. They traded for him years later because they wanted to dump Mel Rojas' contract. God bless him. And so they took back Bobby Bonilla. And yes, he was playing freaking poker with Ricky Henderson, and he hit 150 in 1999. But in fairness, that's not a part of the free agent signing that took place in 1992.
And you're very accurate with that, but that's the problem. That's the sour taste the Mets fans remember. And that's why that, along with the deferred contract, which again is nothing. It's at this point in time, it's nothing. But you mix those two together, to Mets fans' minds, it feels so negative. But reality is, no, the years that he was here, besides the first year, he was good.
He was a productive Met. Now, here's the truth. I understand this. This is when I started kind of figuring out baseball and really watching baseball every day. 1992, I always say, is the first year I really remember. In 1993, I was off the charts into it. Obviously, those were not good years. What can you do? I don't pick it. I'm a kid. He became the face of the worst team money could buy. And so much like, and this is long before our time, I understand that, much like Horace Clark became known as the era of bad Yankee baseball, Bobby Bonilla became the face of bad Met baseball. And it was also his dealing with the media. There was a story that he called up Jay Horowitz in the middle of a game to connect to the official score so he could yell at them for calling an error on him defensively. Bobby was a problem. I acknowledge that. I'm not trying to tell you this was the greatest thing ever. I guess what I want to shed the light on is that he was actually productive as an offensive player. It was not him coming here and sucking for 4 years. There were a lot of things that contributed to us not liking him. Certainly the team was bad, not all his fault. He was bad defensively, whether it was at third base or right field. He didn't have a great attitude. But when you look at the four-year, $23 million deal, he actually offensively was pretty productive. The other guy who kind of fits that is Eddie Murray. The Mets signed Eddie Murray to a two-year contract. It was the same offseason they brought Bobby Bonilla in. Eddie Murray was at the end of his Hall of Fame career. He was 36 years old. But one thing I remember about Eddie is he was steady. He went out and played 156 games in 1992. He played 154 games in 1993. Solid numbers, nothing amazing, but went out there and played. And so while Murray and Bonilla are a part of this horrific era in Met baseball, they performed. And that's just the reality of it. They weren't the main culprits for why the Mets were bad. So I just wanted to mention them. I'm not saying they are going to be on the Mount Rushmore, but they certainly need to at least be considered and certainly have to be remarked as good free agent signings, I think. Because if you ask a Met fan, okay, tell me the worst free agent signings in the history of the Mets, they're going to mention Bobby Bonilla. And I get it. I get why they say that. But 779, 874, 878, 984. Those are his OPSs. If Francisco Lindor does that in the next 4 years, we're very excited. I'm not kidding. We're very excited.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get to this one. This could be, it's a weird free agent signing because he didn't come here with hype. In fact, when he was signed as a free agent, nobody knew who he was. And that was the signing of a former replacement player, Rick Reed. The New York Mets signed Rick Reed at age 32 years old. They plopped him in the rotation in 1997, and he had his best season of his career. He would never match it again. He went 13-9 with a 2.89 ERA, and he went out and threw a 208-inning season. He follows that up in 1998 by going 16-11 with a 3.48 ERA and throws 212 innings. Here's what's unfortunate. While Rick Reed was a very solid part of the 99 team and the 2000 team, he wasn't nearly as good as what he was in 97 and 98. In fact, there was a stretch of games, I think it was 1998, where he had a couple of four-inning perfect games. Like, he kind of flirted with perfect games numerous times. He was nicknamed Mini Maddox, was very similar in terms of his ability to throw strikes. But in 1999, he missed a few starts due to injury. 11-5, 4.58 ERA, so kind of ballooned up. 2000, 11-5, 4.11 ERA. And finally, his final season with the team was in 01. They ended up trading him for Matt Lawton. He went 8-6 with a 3.48 ERA. I think in terms of the expectations for him, he was as good as it gets. Because he didn't come here the way Bobby Bonilla came here. He didn't come here the way Eddie Murray came here. He came here as a scab. I mean, that's how he was referred, a replacement player. And he became a really solid part of a rotation that made the postseason in back-to-back years. And he was also the starting pitcher in the only game the New York Mets won in the 2000 World Series. He was the starter of game three of that World Series against El Duque. So major props to Rick Reed. I know it's weird because you don't think of an under-the-radar guy in that tone, but as very solid free agent signing by the New York Mets going into the season of 1997. Okay. This one, it's funny. I'm trying to be positive. We're doing good free agent signings. And I'm going to have to bring up guys that we hate.
Because Todd Monsui.
Not quite.
Okay.
Okay, this is a really interesting discussion. We're about to have it. Because I think I may say this name and you'll say that was not a good free agent signing. You ready? 4 years, $42.5 million in 2003 for Tom Glavine. Now, before we go into the details, Tom Glavine as a free agent signing, first word that comes to mind.
Good.
Really?
Yeah. It ended terribly.
Yes,
that's how I could put it. But I thought he was good. I did. He was serviceable.
Yeah. No. That's the word. I think you just hit it. And Tom Glavine came in horribly and left horribly because you mentioned obviously the last start he ever made for the Mets. He obviously went back to Atlanta, but game 162, 2007, the Marlins. He was awful. It was as bad as it gets. His first start as a Met was almost as bad. Opening day 2003 against the Chicago Cubs, a game the Mets would lose 15-3. I forget the exact score. But he sandwiched his Met career with the worst possible starts that you could ever have. If you could look past Those two things, okay? And you could look past the fact that he's a Hall of Famer who didn't pitch like a Hall of Famer. Tom Glavine was really, really reliable as a New York Met. Because one thing that's really important from a starting pitcher is availability. It's going out there every 5 days. I'm going to give you these numbers around Tommy's 5 years with the New York Mets. Yeah, it was 5 years. He signed a 4-year contract, though. Did he end up getting an extra year? Maybe there was an extra. Can you look that up, by the way? Because he signed a 4-year contract, but he actually spent 5 years with the Mets. So maybe it was a fifth year. Maybe there was a vesting option. I honestly don't remember. I thought it was a 4-year, $42 million deal when they signed him. So he ended up being here for 5 years. Maybe they re-signed him to a 1-year deal.
Yeah, because it was actually a 3-year deal with a 4th-year option. So where the hell did the 5th year come from?
They must have re-signed him. Okay, yeah. That's fine. So I guess the 5th year doesn't necessarily count in the whole free agency thing, but whatever.
If they only knew what was going to happen in the last game of the season.
I know.
Could have beaten them to it. 2003, he makes 32 starts. 2004, he makes 33 starts. 2005, 33 starts. 2006, 32 starts. 2007, 34 starts. He threw 200 innings in 3 of the 5 years he was with the New York Mets. I'm bitter against him because of game 5 of the NLCS in 2006, more than even game 162 in 2007. The Mets gave him a lead. I think it was the 4th inning. Game 5, swing game in the whole series, immediately gave the lead back. And I remember watching that game on TV, and I looked at my dad and I said, this is why he's here. Like, this guy's here for this effing moment. And he blew it. And it really pissed me off. So I actually am bitter at him more for that game and that performance than I even am for game 162. But it goes back to the old question. Would you rather have a guy that's great but misses half the time? Or would you rather have a guy that goes out there, gets the ball every 5 days, and he's okay? Because Glavine's numbers in his middle 3 years with the Mets were okay. They were middle to back of the rotation kind of stuff. I'll give them to you. 2003, bad first year. What else is new? 9-14 with a 4.5 ERA. 2004, 11-14 with a 3.6 ERA. Okay, 3.6. 2005, 13-13 with a 3.5 ERA. And then 2006, where the Mets obviously had a dominant regular season, he was 15-7 with a 3.82 ERA. And then he closed his Met career with a 4.45 ERA. The numbers are not Hall of Fame worthy. And that's the thing you have to look past. He was never going to be the guy he was in Atlanta. But for 5 years, that son of a bitch went out there and pitched every 5 days. So I would define it as a reliable signing. He went out there and he pitched. And there's some value to that. But none of us will be able to look past the way it started and the way it ended.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, this one's a good one. Now, we're all going to be happy about this one. Robin Ventura. The Mets signed Robin Ventura going into the 1999 season after they choked out of the 98 season to a 4-year, $32 million deal. He was 31 years old, and he had an awesome first year. Really the anti-other guys. So many times guys have come here and they've struggled in their first year and then they pick it up. Ventura was the complete opposite. He would actually never match what he did in his first year. He had 32 home runs. He drove in 120 runs. He had so many big hits in that 1999 season. Obviously, in the postseason, we think about the Grand Slam single. But even during the regular season, he got a huge hit to win that Saturday night game against the Pirates, game 161, that kind of set the Mets up to eventually get to the one-game playoff. He had that game in which he had grand slams in both ends of a doubleheader. He was awesome. Plus, we can't forget the glove. I mean, defensively, he was as good as it gets. He was a big part of the greatest defensive infield in the history of Major League Baseball, at least deemed by SI. So, amazing first year by Robin. The problem was he fell off. 2000, 24 home runs, 84 RBIs, a 777 OPS, and in 2001, 142 games, 21 home runs, 61 RBIs, a 778 OPS. The Mets actually traded him during the offseason of what would have been his final year with the Mets. They traded him to the New York Yankees, of all teams, for David Justice. Big name trade that really turned into nothing because the Mets flipped David Justice, I think a few weeks later, for a reliever. Mark Guthrie was his name. And Ventura ended up having a good year with the Yankees in 02. So he actually went over there and played pretty well. I'd say it was a good signing despite the way it ended. I think sometimes when you give a guy a contract like that, you know you're not getting the full 4 years of awesomeness. But he was great in the first year. And even in those 2 years where he wasn't the same offensive player, he was so good defensively. So good defensively. And became one of the leaders in that room for a team that made the postseason in back-to-back years. So, Robin Ventura, hell of a signing. You'd agree with that, right, Hoff?
Oh, no question. Because like you said, too, the moments he gave fans in a year where they made the playoffs, it was significant. And it was, again, like I... Definitely, I think you nailed one for the Mount Rushmore for me.
Oh, you spoke too soon. He may not make the Mount Rushmore. By the way, my next guy, and I love this guy. I genuinely like him. He's a good dude. He's been on the show with us in the past before. I think, though, his signing becomes overrated because we like him so much. And that guy signed a 4-year, $26 million contract right before the 2003 season, and that guy is Cliff Floyd. Cliff Floyd just didn't play enough. That was my biggest issue with Cliff. And I think in a way he was looked at as a tough guy who battled through injury and played through injury. And I appreciate that. But the facts are the facts. He didn't play enough. 2003, 108 games. Very productive in those 108 games. Had an 894 OPS. Hit 18 home runs. Drove in 68 runs. Fantastic. Team sucked. Cliff barely played. Following season 04, another year in which the Mets sucked, only 113 games. Same numbers, though. 18 home runs, 63 RBIs, barely played. The 1 year he played was 2005. He went out there and played 150 games, hit 34 home runs, had an 863 OPS. Mets had a fun year in 05. That was like the return to relevance season. They were sort of in a pennant race, fell out of it early September. That was the first year of Beltran, the first year of Pedro Martinez, the final year of Mike Piazza, and a great year out of Cliff Floyd. And 2006 was just, it was a lost season, man. Cliff Floyd was hurt most of the year, didn't produce that much when he played. I have two images of Cliff Floyd from the 06 season. Number one, he caught the final out that won the Mets the National League East. It was a fly ball to left field with Billy Wagner on the mound, and I could still see Cliff with his arms up. Cool moment. And then, and this is not his fault, Willie Randolph using him in Game 7 to pinch hit. When, with first and second and nobody out, down by two runs in the bottom of the ninth inning, I thought at least, go to Tom Glavine and lay a bunt down. Now, maybe all these years later we look at that differently. Bunting has sort of died. Even my view on bunting has certainly changed. But the reason in the moment I didn't want Cliff up there was because he couldn't move. He could not run. And if he hit the ball on the ground, it was a double play. And that to me was the worst case scenario. When Cliff came up, though, Shea was electric. And Willie was trying to catch a moment and thought, can you imagine Cliff Floyd gets a fastball, hits a ball over the phone? Oh, my God. And I had visions of it. I think we all dreamt of it. But when Cliff struck out, I actually had a sigh of relief because I said, no double play. Okay, move on to the next. And obviously the inning did not exactly work out. Speaking of which, let's be honest. Spoiler alert. Whether you like him or you don't, he's on the Mount Rushmore of free agent signings. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Carlos Beltran. Carlos signed a 7-year, $119 million contract going into the 2005 season. So here's the deal with Carlos. 7-year contract. He had three full awesome seasons. He had three seasons in which, not saying he was bad, missed a lot of time. And then the extra season was year one, where he played, but he wasn't good. And really has become the poster boy of the first year in New York syndrome for a big free agent signee. He played 151 games, the second most games he played in any season as a Met, but only hit 16 home runs, had a 745 OPS, and Met fans were very, very underwhelmed. Very right. Underwhelmed.
So I'm going to come to his defense. He came in, and they put him in right field, if I'm correct. Correct?
They moved Mike Cameron to right field.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Now, the games he missed, I believe, was after that collision. Collision.
Cameron moves to right. He was devastated because Cameron was a really good defensive center fielder. Beltran was very good, too. It's tough. They were both really good, aggressive defensive center fielders. They move Cameron to right. In San Diego, they converged because they both have the center field mentality. Cameron took the worst of it. Beltran was hurt, but he didn't miss much time. I mean, he ended up playing 150 games that season.
Well, my defense was that they were messing with him because I thought there was something going on. Maybe it was just the first year nerves. And again, the big thing is that the reason why a lot of people were not happy with him is because the rumor is he went back to the Yankees and said, what it take? I'll take less money to go play for you.
So that was a true rumor. I had Carlos on a few years later, said not true. Didn't happen. You could believe it. You don't have to believe it. But here's why I don't buy that as a reason to dislike him. I remember when the Mets signed him in January of 2006, and no Mets fan gave a crap about that. They were just so excited that here was this guy who dominated in the postseason. He's only 27 years old, 28 years old, and he's coming to our team. That became a convenient thing to dislike about him. That became he wanted to be a Yankee. I mean, who gives a crap? CC Sabathia wanted to be a freaking Oakland A. Does that matter? He signed with the Yankees. It doesn't matter. The excuse for Beltran, by the way, that I think is fair, and Carlos learned from it, as you'll see in the rest of his career, is Carlos was hurt in 2005, and he played through injury. And he learned the lessons of it, which is if you don't perform, they're going to boo you. So it creates a question you got to ask yourself as an athlete. Would you rather battle through injury and play hurt, knowing it may affect your play, or would you rather say, I'm not going to play. I'm not going to play till I'm healthy. And if you look at the last 3 years Beltran had with the Mets, I wouldn't say, let me rephrase that. 2011, he was healthy. He got traded in the middle of the season. So let me take 11 out because he was healthy that year. 2010, 2009, he barely played. He played 64 games in 10. He played 81 games in 9. I think there was controversy about a knee surgery he wanted that the Mets didn't want him to have. But I think that first year influenced him, where it was, I'm not going to play hurt. Why? So Met fans could think I suck? Comes back in 06, has an MVP caliber year, one of the great seasons in the history of the Met franchise, 41 home runs, 116 RBIs, a 982 OPS, comes back in 07, 33 home runs, 112 RBIs, 878 OPS, comes back in 08, plays 161 games, 27 home runs, 112 RBIs, 876 OPS, produced when he played in 09, and then in his final year of 2011, and by the way, thank you, Carlos, has a great stretch, and the Mets are able to turn him into Zach Wheeler. So, thank you, Carlos. I tell you, man, it's not perfect, but when you sign a guy to a 7-year contract and you get as much production as you got out of Carlos, even though he missed some time, I think that's an A free agent signing. I think you got to look back at that and say, that was great. I would do it again.
Especially for the length. Because again, you're talking about like, we touched on Bonilla, we touched on Ventura, we touched on a lot of these other guys. They didn't pan out for the length. They had like one or two good years, but we only signed them for three or four. And they couldn't even go that far. Beltran gave you a lot of length.
Gave you a lot of length. And one thing that is not fair in terms of how people talk about Carlos is they think of the strikeout in 06 and say he wasn't clutch. It's ridiculous. Beltran was the most clutch player on the New York Mets those years. And unfortunately, because of the way 06 ended and because of it's easy to forget good moments in 07 and 08 because of the way those seasons ended, you almost ignore how clutch Beltran was. I really thought, you know, just watching him every single day, he was the most clutch player they had. You know, we all love David Wright. He's a homegrown Met. Beltran was more clutch than David Wright. He just was. I mean, it's not hating. It's not extra love. It's just, it's a reality. And I think, unfortunately, because of the way things ended in 06, he doesn't get enough credit for being as clutch as he actually was.
I agree, but there's a little bittersweetness behind Carlos Beltran, because this is the thing, right? 06, they go to the playoffs, he strikes out. That's the end of the playoff era for the Mets and Carlos Beltran. But yet we signed him with the notion of this guy is unbelievable in the playoffs, and we only got there once with him. So it's kind of like we had a nice run. We just missed out because he struck out on a nasty pitch by Adam Wainwright, which you got to give more credit to Adam Wainwright than anything else. And yet we're sitting here going like, but the guy is so clutch in the playoffs, but we can't see it. It's not until he goes to the Yankees and other teams where they go back to the playoffs.
Yeah, no, listen, man, I totally get it. I mean, it's not necessarily his fault that they didn't get other opportunities in the postseason.
No, that's the Wilpon's fault. We can say that over and over and over. It's the same thing that they listen, when they promised David Wright the world, sign with us, stay here, we'll do all this. And what do? They bring Michael Kadire, his buddy, and that's about it.
I get it.
They push the fences back.
Yes. In 2008, which I don't know if it's fair to call that a collapse. 07 was the collapse, but whatever. Mets lost the pennant race in 2008. Carlos Beltran put the New York Mets on his back and said, all right, guys, I'm going to carry you through September. And here are the numbers, just to back up my point. September of 08, as the Mets are trying to win a pennant race, Carlos Beltran hit .344. He had a 1,086 OPS. He hit 6 home runs and drove in 19 runs. And he did that in September/October of 2008, including hitting a home run in the final game at Chase Stadium that came back to help tie the game, if memory serves correct, against the Marlins. But it didn't matter because Scott Schoenweiss sucks. He gave up 2 home runs and the Mets lost the game. And that, to me, is a lot of what happened to Carlos in 2008. I know it's not the playoffs, but he performed at a high level in games that mattered down the stretch of the season. It didn't work. But look, one of the great free agent signings in the history of the franchise. Moving on, we got two closers. Number one, Frankie Rodriguez. 3 years, $37 million. After the Mets had no bullpen in 2008, they said, let's go get K-Rod. I mean, it was an okay signing. Frankie in 09 was fantastic until the Luis Castillo drop. That was his first blown save of the season. He got off to a great start, ends up saving 35 games that year. The problem for Frankie, and this hurt him throughout his tenure, the Mets weren't that good. So you look at a closer, and it's like, well, what can you do if you're not given a lead? In 2010, he saved 25 games with a 2-1 ERA. And then in 2011, the Mets knew they weren't going anywhere. So after his 23 saves, they flipped him. They traded him to the Brewers. It's not a bad signing. It's not his fault, though. I think if Frankie Rodriguez was the closer on a good Met team, maybe we view him differently. But the team just wasn't any good.
No, I agree with that. And then there was the issues with the, I think there was some issues. Again, there's always issues.
Father-in-law. Is that what it was when he punched his father-in-law in the face or something like that?
There's always something going on. It could never be just perfect. You know, this guy's great. This guy's amazing. He makes our life amazing. Yeah, no, K-Rod, I agree. Like, he came in here. Did he sign right after the 75 save?
Yes. Yeah.
And that
he saved a ridiculous amount of games for the Angels. And then the Mets are like, let's go at him. And they signed him. And they traded for J.J. Putz. So the Mets tried to really address their bullpen issues, which had a lot to do with their failures in 2008. And Putz wasn't any good. And Frankie Rodriguez, like I said, he was good. And then he sort of fell off after the Castillo drop.
Didn't Putz have the elbow, the stuff in his elbow? He had like particles in his elbow, so it basically shut him down for the first year, right?
He wasn't that good. He got hurt, and when he pitched, he wasn't that good. This one's a little trickier. Billy Wagner. Mm. The Mets signed Billy Wagner to a four-year, $43 million deal after the 2005 season. They realized they needed a real closer. Braden Looper wasn't cutting it. And Billy was mostly good. He saved 40 games in 2006, 2.24 ERA. He saved 34 games in 2007, 2.63 ERA. In 2008, he got hurt in September. He ended up saving 27 games with a 2.3 ERA. If he doesn't get hurt, the Mets probably make the postseason. He misses all of 2009. He comes back to throw like an inning, and then they trade him. Like, he got healthy, and they said, great, now we're sending your ass to Boston. the only reason I have negative feelings towards Billy, he is Sho Taguchi. Sho Taguchi beat him in game two of the National League Championship Series. And I believe that the Mets' lack of faith in Billy Wagner is the reason why Aaron Heilman started a second inning in game seven. And that's when he allowed the home run to Yadier Molina. So I sort of blame Billy for some of the failures in that NLCS in 2006. But there's no arguing that during the regular season for a short period of time, and he was older at the time, he was a very good closer for the team during the regular season.
I liked Billy Wagner a lot. I thought that he had a lot of good moments again. But the 2008, that was huge. I remember that, him going down. And you just, after witnessing 2007 with a team that you thought was good enough to get to the playoffs and they just collapsed, you lose your closure like that. You just feel like there's no end in sight.
They ended up using Luis Ayala to try to save games down the stretch of the year that year. It was not a pretty scene.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere, online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
How about this one? And this is a minor league deal. But it's, to me, it's a free agent deal. He was a minor league free agent, and the New York Mets came to terms with, I mean, you could argue, I'll tell you right now, you could argue this is the best free agent signing in the history of the Mets. Minor league deal, R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey gets signed to a minor league deal, and in 2010, makes 26 starts, 11-9, 2.84 ERA. Whoa, something's going on here. 2011, makes 32 starts, those 208 innings, 8-13, 3.28 ERA. Wow, R.A. Dickey's established himself as a pretty good starter in this league. And then in his final year with the Mets, year three, he makes 33 starts, he throws 233 innings, he goes 20-6 with a 2.73 ERA and wins the National League Cy Young. R.A. Dickey's trying to negotiate. It's weird. So Dickey signs as a minor league deal, but then he can't just get to free agency because you still own his arbitration rights. So the Mets and Dickey wants a new contract. He's like, hey, let's work out an extension. And the Mets are like, yeah, let's trade your ass to Toronto. And obviously they got a lot back. They got Travis d'Arnaud. They got Noah Syndergaard. And so Dickey spends 3 years with the Mets, signs as a minor league deal, and has three awesome years as a starting pitcher. Bro, that's as good as it gets.
Dude, Cy Young? I mean, none of these other guys won. I mean, maybe they made some all-star games, but they didn't win MVPs. No, we don't have an MVP. Cy Young? Let's go.
This one is also, I think, pound for pound, a really solid signing. Curtis Granderson. The Mets signed Curtis Granderson before the 2014 season to a four-year contract. He goes out in 2014, does not have a good year. First year with the Mets. What else is new? 155 games, 20 home runs, 66 RBIs, just a 715 OPS. But in 2015, and this is where I think we look at him as the guy, he's the leadoff hitter in 2015. Wait, was he the leadoff hitter in 2015? Yeah. Okay, got my memory straight.
Yeah.
Leadoff hitter in 2015.
Because he was hitting crazy home runs, right?
Yeah, yeah. He had 26 home runs, had an 821 OPS, was getting on base at a great clip. Curtis Granderson plays 157 games. Mets obviously go all the way to the World Series. 2016, he starts to play center field again. Makes an incredible play in that wild card game, helping Noah Syndergaard get through. I think it was the sixth or seventh inning, I'm trying to remember. Hits 30 home runs, but only drives in 59 runs, which was very strange. 779 OPS. 2017, plays very well, 815 OPS. They trade him at the trade deadline to the LA Dodgers. 3.5 solid years, great attitude. Met fans loved him. Big part of the 15 team. I think that goes down in history as a good signing.
Oh, no question. And again, like you, the one thing that I will always say is, like, for example, we talked about some free agents that we brought in that didn't fit the team because the team was just bad. Like, you could bring in a great closer if you don't have a good team. If you can't get to the closer, it's not going to help. Curtis Granderson was a guy that at the time they needed that type of player, and he helped them get to the playoffs twice. It was
yes.
An important role.
No doubt about it. Very good free agent signing. One of the rare guys who I think is liked by both Met fans and Yankee fans. There's not a lot of guys who kind of fit that mold, and Curtis Granderson are certainly one of them. The Grandy Man. And finally, Met fans would love this signing because this guy went out there. He signed a three-year contract. Yes, three-year contract. And I remember during this offseason, the debate was Bartolo Colon or Philip Hughes, the former Yankee Phil Hughes. The Mets decided to go with the 41-year-old Bartolo Colon. And he went out there and in three seasons made every start and then became a cult hero when he hit, as Gary Cohn called it, the greatest home run in the history of baseball. But think about this with Bartolo. He got better every single season. In 2014, 31 starts, 15 wins, a 4.09 ERA, 200 innings. 2015, 31 starts, 14 wins, 4.16 ERA, 194 innings. And then his best year comes in his last year at freaking 43 years old. 15-8, 3.43 ERA, 191 innings. If the Mets win the wild card game against the Giants, Big Bart is making postseason starts. How about that return on a three-year contract? Not bad, eh?
It's crazy because you so far we found the gems to be older guys on the tail end of their career that just kind of rebounded. That's kind of gross.
Dude, it's crazy that I'm starting to think that Rick Reed, R.A. Dickey, and Bartolo Colon have to be on the Mount Rushmore free agent signings. One guy's a replacement player who's a journeyman minor leaguer. The other one is this old knuckleballer who nobody wants. And the last guy is a 41-year-old fat ass. And those three guys, you may have to say, are on the Mount Rushmore of free agent signings.
You know what? I'm putting Bobby Bowden on now, too. Screw it. Those are the four. That's our list.
So to me, it's Beltran's easy. Beltran's a lock.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt. You know, no matter what you think about him, Carlos Beltran is the greatest free agent signing in the history of the Mets. You know, I think that Colon and Dickey, for a short period of time, they were very solid, especially Dickey. I mean, Dickey went out and won a Cy Young. I get it. But when you talk about the overall impact on a franchise, Carlos Beltran is the guy. And that's why, for anyone who says negative things about him, it's not close. He's the greatest free agent signing in the history of the Mets. It's tough with these other guys because even though they're specifically Rick Reed and R.A. Dickey, even though they are free agents, letter of the law, they're free agent signings. It's so different when you're talking about a guy that nobody wanted. Now, it's different than buying kind of like that big ticket item. So they count, don't get me wrong. I think Dickey has to be there because Rick Reed had two good years and, you know, kind of fell off a little bit. Dickey never fell off with the Mets, and the Mets got out at the right time. So not only was Beltran a great free agent signing and Dickey was a free agent signing, they then were able to turn them in at the end into key pieces of the next era of Met baseball. Now, say what you want about Noah Syndergaard and Travis d'Arnaud. Now, those guys contributed in a big way in 2015 and beyond. Zach Wheeler, not necessarily 2015, but contributed in a pretty big way until the Wilpons got cheap and they didn't re-sign him. So oddly, I not only think about the performance that Carlos Beltran and R.A. Dickey had, but I think about the return the Mets got on the investment when they were able to trade them off. So Dickey and Beltran, to me, are easy. And then I kind of fight. You know, Ventura, it's only one good year. I'm never putting Glavin there. I'm not putting Bonilla there. I'm not putting Murray there. I think I do have to put Rick Reed. Okay. So I'm at Beltran, Dickey, and Reed. I can't go all the way with Colon. I know that you guys want to do it. I can't do it. So my fourth guy on the Mount Rushmore of Met free agent signings would actually be Curtis Granderson. I think I'm going to have to give it to Curtis because leadoff hitter on a team that went to the World Series. That ain't bad. That's pretty good. So my Mount Rushmore of Met free agent signings would be Carlos Beltran, Curtis Granderson, R.A. Dickey, and Rick Reed. Hoff, what say you?
So I want to say Rick Reed just because the story, and I remember the turmoil he went through. Like sometimes there's some players that don't deserve to get crapped on, but he definitely did because he was a replacement player, and a lot of people didn't like that about him. So I think he got a bad, not a bad reputation, but I think he just was outcasted throughout the league for quite some time, if I'm correct. I want to give it to him, but I can't. I think you're right. Carlos Beltran is a no-brainer. R.A. Dickey's a Cy Young. I mean, we've had a few of those, which is great for our franchise, but as a free agent signing at that age, you got to give it to R.A. Dickey. I'm going to agree. Curtis Granderson, definitely up there because he's somebody that at the time, it's like when you want a player and they go out and bring him in and then he performs at a high level. I know he didn't do it. He wasn't perfect, especially the 1 year where he went. You said he hit 30-something home runs, 59 RBIs. It wasn't perfect. But still, like, he performed well enough that got us to the playoffs, helped us out, made key plays. That's why I'm putting Robin Ventura on my Mount Rushmore as well, because I'm never going to forget about that ground rule double home run. Like it just, yeah. Or the home run ground rule double. Like it's, to me, that's a moment that's going to live on with the Mets. And he gave us a lot of moments and he gave us a lot of grand slams. And that just year was special.
Yeah. No, it's tough to keep Robin Ventura off because even though it's a 4-year contract and he really only had one awesome year, that year was truly awesome. You're right. The grand slam single, the two grand slams and a doubleheader, the clutch hit on that Saturday night against the Pirates, the great defense that really led to the greatest defensive infield of all time. Yeah, you're right. So who should I take off? God damn it. See, Hoff's good sometimes. Sometimes he convinces me. Sometimes I convince him. He convinced me. I'm not taking Beltran off. I'm not taking Granderson off. I can't. So yeah, I guess I'm taking Rick Reed off. You know what? Screw it. I'm sticking with what I said. Thank you, Robin. You just missed it. You like my, I got presidents not on Mount Rushmore that I like. All right, that's all you are, Robin.
You're close, but just not enough.
Yeah, that's, he's a good one. Now, there's no question. He's a good one. It goes back to the old argument. How much do you need success, not short of a championship, because none of these guys won, for the signing to be successful? You know, like how many years does that guy need to perform at a high level for you to say, okay, it was worth it. That was good. Because in Ventura's case, it was a 4-year contract. They traded him before the fourth year, and he wasn't nearly as good in two of the years. So really it was one awesome, awesome season.
Right. And here's the thing is like, I looked through this list of guys, you know, I'm never going to sit there and say that all these guys were special throughout baseball. We talk about retiring numbers, Hall of Famers, some of them. Okay. But like the one person that I think has to be up there for Mets retirement, as far as number wise go, I think it's gotta be Carlos Beltran. I think a lot of people, you know, look at the way things ended in 2006, looked at how the team didn't do that well, but the guy put up such good numbers as a free agent. Like he put up amazing numbers for the Mets.
He has a very complicated legacy, as we laid out. You can't argue how good he was. You can't argue how productive he was. But for a myriad of reasons, there's a mixed feeling towards him. Even though, you know, we spend a lot of time during these off seasons dreaming about free agent signings, talking about sign this guy, sign that guy. And let this list be your guide. It's tough for that guy to perform nearly at your level because our list was not littered with all these incredible stars who performed high. Now, a lot of that is the Mets haven't dipped their toes much in a free agency in their past, but it takes a lot for it to be successful. And Carlos ultimately was successful. It's just there are things in his legacy that some Met fans really can't get past. But the one thing we should all agree on, as we went through all these different free agent signings, love him or hate him, he is the greatest free agent signing in the history of the New York Mets. Hopefully today's happy, positive podcast puts a smile on everybody's face. Thank you for listening to the happy edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.